All right, I guess we're ready to get going. Sorry about that. We had a little internet connectivity problem. My name is Rob Bagby. I'm a cloud architect with Microsoft out of the U.S. And the title of this session is Exploiting Azure Machine Learning in Your Applications. I'm not a data scientist. As it says up there, I'm a cloud architect. My background is development, software development, architecting solutions, building solutions. The purpose of this talk is to hopefully give you enough information or talk to you about the ecosystem in Azure that will allow you as developers and architects to take advantage of machine learning within your applications. The goal of all of the machine learning teams that we have at Microsoft is to what they call democratize data science, which means let's make it easy enough for developers to be able to do it. You don't need to be a data scientist to be able to take advantage of the varying algorithms out there. So what I'm going to specifically be talking about today is really kind of three pillars or three ways by which you can take advantage of machine learning. The first you'll see is Azure ML Studio. And that's the one where you're actually going to build your own models. And I'm going to walk you through building a model from the ground up here today. And I'm going to talk to you about a lot of the modules in there that help make your life a little bit easier. The second is Microsoft Azure Marketplace. And Marketplace is a bunch, it's an ecosystem where data scientists can publish their APIs. They build their own models, and then we can take advantage of those. It's as simple as calling a web service. They do all the hard work. They build the model. They publish it. It's now an API, a web API, and we can simply make a call to that web API and take advantage of that algorithm. And the third is Project Oxford. Project Oxford is a project that's been built by the Cortana team that allows you to take advantage, again, of APIs that have machine learning behind them that allow you to interact with everyday objects, things like speech or pictures, voice to text, text to voice, looking at pictures. Are these two people the same? We'll walk through all of the options, and I'll walk you through some interactive demos. So here's our agenda. The first thing I want to do is do a brief machine learning overview. How many here feel comfortable that they know what machine learning is? Okay, several. Okay. So this will be a quick review for you. I just want to talk about some high-level concepts, just so you can talk, so we're talking the same language when you're building your models or looking at other people's models, that everybody's level set on the same page. Then I'm going to walk through Azure ML Studio, and I'm going to walk through about a 15- to 20-minute demo building out a model from the ground up. Then we'll walk through Project Oxford, and I'll show you some interactive demos that you can play with online. And lastly, I'll walk you through the machine learning marketplace, and I'll show you an application I wrote that takes advantage of one of the APIs in the machine learning marketplace. So let's start with the machine learning overview. As I said, I want to talk about a couple key concepts. So if you get these down, then we should all be speaking the same language, if you will. The first is I want to talk about what's supervised versus unsupervised learning. And then I want to talk about regression, classification, clustering, and anomaly detection. That second line there, those are the four classes of algorithms that are available to you in Azure Machine Learning Studio. So those are kind of the four categories of algorithms that you can take advantage of. So it behooves you to understand what those are, what that means, and we'll walk through that. So to start with, supervised versus unsupervised learning. Supervised learning, within supervised learning, you have data where you have known answers. Okay? So let's say you're trying to build a model that predicts whether somebody is going to buy your product or not buy your product. In order to train that model, you have to have historical data that shows some information about people and then whether they actually bought it or not. You have to have that it's called a label. You have to have the information, the known category, a yes or a no in the case of a binary classification. Let's say that I was trying to build a model that classified my customers as high purchase, medium purchase, and low purchase customers. In supervised learning, I would have to have data which actually had that classification that said this customer is high, this customer is medium, this customer is low, high, medium, low, and a bunch of data to train my model. Your model in supervised learning then takes that information and builds a predictive model where you can then pass in data that doesn't have the labels and it can accurately do the prediction for you. So that's supervised learning. You have data, historical data, that has the answers. In unsupervised learning, you don't. You have data, obviously, but it doesn't have those labels. It doesn't have those answers. It doesn't have the pre-configured categories. The goal in unsupervised learning is for you to figure out, hey, are there clusters in my data of like units? So maybe I've got customer information, and I'm trying to figure out something about my customers. And so I can use unsupervised learning to say, hey, I think that there are three different kinds of customers. So give me three different clusters and tell me what features of those customers make them different. So that's the difference between supervised and unsupervised learning. They're kind of high-level categories. Now, if you break down supervised learning, where we have that historical data, we can break it down into regression versus classification. A regression problem is one where you get back a number. And a classification is where you're trying to categorize something. So some examples of regression problems. You want to predict the temperature. I want to predict miles per gallon on a car. I want to predict the age of somebody. Those are classifications. Those are regression problems. Classification problems are ones where I want to categorize something. So what form of cancer did this patient have? Or what type of customer is this? Or what restaurant should I recommend for you? What book would you like to read? Those are classification problems. Now, classification problems can be broken down even further into binary and multi-class. Binary, hopefully we all know what binary is. We're all here at Ignite. So we know that's yes, no, true or false. In machine learning terms, it's positive or negative. So binary classification problems, will the customer buy? Will the person show up? Is the person going to live longer than 2 years? It's a yes, no, a Boolean response. Multi-class, again, have more than two, greater than two. What restaurant should I recommend? What type of cancer do you have, etc. Now, what's the difference between classification and clustering? Again, this goes back to supervised versus unsupervised. A classification problem is a supervised learning problem. You have known classes that you want to categorize something into. I know that I have high value, medium value, and low value customers, and I just want to figure out who you are. Are you a high, medium, or low? But for clustering, it's unsupervised. I just want to say, hey, give me this cluster of customers so I can try and figure out something about them. The last area that we have a class of algorithms for in machine learning, Azure Machine Learning Studio anyways, is anomaly detection. And in anomaly detection, we're simply trying to find patterns that don't match the norm. So if you look at trying to figure out when a denial of service attack is occurring, or when somebody is going to be sick. Your general, over time, in your temporal data, you've got all this data about me as a person and my health, and that anomaly is when I'm sick, and I want to detect those. Or when your software is not performing, or when your software is sick, if you will. So that was the high level. I told you it was going to be high level. That was high level machine learning overview. Now we're going to talk about Azure ML Studio and hopefully bringing up those definitions will help as we start looking through Machine Learning Studio. So why did we create Machine Learning Studio? What was the purpose? What was our goal? Well, there are a lot of challenges when trying to work with machine learning. The first is access to algorithms. Do we all want to write all our algorithms from scratch? Does everybody want to crack open R and build out every algorithm from scratch? Or do we want to take advantage of algorithms that are out there? We have, to my knowledge anyways, at Microsoft over 1,000 data scientists employed across areas where you would never imagine that data scientists work, but most notably in Microsoft Research, in Kinect for Xbox, Bing, Cortana. And all of these data scientists have built a variety of effective algorithms. And we've taken those algorithms and we've made them available via Machine Learning Studio. The other challenges that you have when you're working in machine learning historically is just all of the tools and all of the languages that you have to use. You have to install varying tool sets onto your machine. You have to understand typically greater than one language. And once you build your model, to deploy that model is painful. I worked for years in London in the energy trading field, and my customers generally had a bunch of data scientists who were out trying to do varying predictions on, you know, should we buy, or where should we buy, or at what level should we buy, or when should we trade, et cetera. And these guys would go out and they'd build their models in God knows what languages. And then we would all try and we'd spend weeks, if not months, trying to productionize those, try to get them into production so that we could actually use them. So moving from dev to production is massively painful in the data science world. And so that's why we built Machine Learning Studio, to address all of those issues. First of all, who here has played with ML Studio? Just a very few. You're gonna get an introduction today. It's browser-based. You don't need to install anything. You open up a browser, you go to studio.azureml.net, and off you go. And if you don't have any money, you can still set up a free workspace, and you can play with it, and you can evaluate it for free, okay? It's best-in-class algorithms. The algorithms we used with Kinect to define when arms are moving, and when somebody, what's a face, whether somebody's smiling or not, all of those algorithms are available to you. And you'll see all of the vast number of algorithms that are available, and it's growing every day. It's easily deployable. You simply click a button and you deploy it out as a web service. And that's a scalable web service. You don't have to worry about scaling that. We do that for you. Now, if you want, and you don't want to use all the predefined algorithms, or you want to do something custom yourself, we allow you to use R or Python. And so you can, really the sky's the limit for you. So you're not limited. It's not one of those, hey, I've got to go down to just what you're letting me do. I can take advantage of the algorithms that are there, and if there's functionality that's not there, I can write it myself. I put this slide up here mainly because when you download the slides, or if you download the slides, hopefully you'll find a value in it. I've got the link to this on there. But this is a nice listing of Azure machine learning capabilities, and I wholly realize that that's too small to read, so I'm going to zoom in a little bit. But you can see on the top left, going down the left-hand side, it talks to you about all of the varying algorithms that are available to you. So you remember I talked about anomaly detection and classification and clustering and then regression. All of those algorithms that are available to you are listed here. And if you go onto the right-hand side, you can see these are the data sources that we support. These are the sources that you can use. And then these are a bunch of modules that allow you to prep your data, allow you to make changes to your data, clean your data, if you will. So this is a nice slide that you can download. The URL's there. You probably can't see it. If you want to take a photo of it, there you go. Otherwise, you can download the slides and you can get access to this. But it's a really nice tool set for you. Hopefully, you're quick with your camera. Now, when you're building an experiment, you've got data, and then you've got a bunch of modules, and the modules encapsulate functionality. Some of those modules encapsulate the actual algorithms. Other modules encapsulate functionality like cleaning my data, cleaning out missing values, splitting my data so that I can train my model and I can validate the model. And so I've got a listing over here on the left-hand side of what we support for data sets. So you've got, well, I'm sure all of you can read this and you can take it with you, but it's also clearly defined on that last slide, but we support uploaded data sets, blob, table storage, SQL queries, Hive queries, data feeds like OData. On the right are some of the high-level modules that you'll typically use. A reader, that's what you'll use to read data out of maybe blob storage or table storage or SQL Server. A writer, if you want to write your results back to SQL Server, you can use a writer module. A split, that allows you to take one data source and split it into two. Because typically what I want to do is I want to train my model with part of the data, and then I want to validate it with the second part of the data. And that keeps me from overfitting or creating a model that's only good on my training data. So that's what split's good for. We've got a variety of algorithms. I'll show those to you. Well, you can train, score, and evaluate your model. That's the money. That's really what machine learning is all about, the ability to train a model and then to score and evaluate it so you can tell how good the model is. And then we've got some others, sweep parameters. Some of these algorithms have a lot of parameters that you have to set, and it's really complex, and you could spend days tweaking the parameters trying to figure out which one's the best. But sweep parameters will do that for you. It will run through your algorithm a series of times, changing the parameters, and it'll give you the optimal parameter. And it's amazing just how close it gets to, if you hand-tune a model, what sweep parameters will give you. And then feature selection. You ever wonder which features are truly predictive out of your data? We can tell you that with modules, and I'll show you how that works. Here's another chart that I wanted you to be able to download and have as you go forward. And again, there's the algorithm. This one's a great one. This one tells you, if you want to start having a guess on, hey, which one of these algorithms should I use? Well, if I have a two-class classification problem, I can start to use this as guidance. Hey, what's important to me? Is memory footprint important to me? Or is accuracy important to me? Do I care about the speed of the training? This gives me guidance as to which one of these algorithms I should use. Let me just zoom in on the URL for those of you who want to take a photo of that. But this is a great tool set for you to be able to help define which algorithm should I use. Now, that being said, when you're building models, try them all. If you're doing a two-class classification problem set, try all of the algorithms and evaluate them against each other and use the best one, and I'll show you how to do that. So with that, why don't we jump into a demo? So here I am. In Azure Machine Learning Studio. Now you're gonna have to excuse me. We had to go onto the speaker. I'm on the speaker wireless, which there's a bunch of speakers in there watching videos right now. So it might be slow depending upon the quality of video they're watching. So here I am in Studio. Now, as I said, if you don't have an account already, you can create a free one. This is my free workspace. You can see when I go over to click on Studio here, It's gonna authenticate me, and it's gonna authenticate me. Well, we'll authenticate over to. Let's do this one. You can create your own free workspace, and you can evaluate this at no cost. So you can see I've got a bunch of experiments, but I'm gonna go ahead and create a new experiment. So on the bottom left-hand side, I'm going to click New. Now, if I wanted to upload a data set, I could just choose Data Set here, and I could upload it from a local file. But I've already done that. So I'm just going to choose a new experiment, and I'm going to create a blank experiment. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to grab my data. Now, if you've done any data science, you'll note that there's a lot of prescriptive guidance out there. And the first bit of guidance you get is, the first thing you need to do is understand the business domain. What is the problem I'm trying to solve? In business terms, how am I gonna make money, or how am I gonna save money? If you're a doctor, you know, what am I doing? Am I trying to save lives? Am I trying to save medicine? What is the outcome that my model, when I'm done, is going to do? What business problem is it gonna solve? Because if you don't have that, you're gonna spend a lot of time building a lot of useless models. And they may be really accurate, and they may be really precise, but they're not gonna do anything for you. So make sure you understand what your business problem is. Once you understand what your business problem is, the next thing you need to do is understand your data. So you've got data that you're gonna use to help build your model, right? But you need to first understand that data. So you need to know some things about it. Do I have a bunch of missing values? What data types do I have? What are some key statistics? What are the standard deviations? Do I have a bunch of things that are correlated with one another that are unnecessary to put into my model? These are all questions that I need to know so I can start to understand my data. Do I have outliers? Do I have some data that's sitting way outside of this normal range that's skewing the value of that data? I've got to look and understand my data. Now, in a real world machine learning project, you'll probably spend 80% of your time understanding your data and doing feature selection and cleaning your data, and 20% on the rest. So we've got some tools that'll help you to understand it. The first thing you can do to understand your data, well, let me give you the business problem here first. We've got a bunch of data about historical bike sales. So I've got a bunch of bikes, I've got customers that bought my bikes, and I've got some demographics about the customers, whether they bought the bikes, and I've got a label that says if they bought it or not. So this is a binary classification problem. Okay, I want to use this model to figure out if potential customers are likely going to buy my bike. Okay, so that's what my data looks like. So now what I want to do here is I'm going to right click, and I'm going to choose visualize. And I'm gonna get some basic statistics for my data. You can see I can look at the first 100 rows here of my data. You can see I've got marital status, gender, education, occupation, etc. Now, I wanna see some statistics though. And so I can just click on one of these and I can see some high level statistics. I can see the mean, the median, min, max, standard deviation. I can see the missing values. Here, this is a bit unrealistic. I don't have any missing values. This data has already been cleaned. And down here, you can see I get a histogram for my yearly income. And you can see that I have outliers. Look at those guys on the far right. Those are statistical outliers. And the only reason I know that is because I can take a look using something called a box and whisker plot, which is a better view to look at outliers. And you can see in this plot, these three dots here are statistical outliers. Those are data points that are going to skew my data. Now, I could just lop that data off and I could say, hey, everybody with all the records that have income over X don't take into account, but that wouldn't be good for me because I want, when somebody's passing me data with customers with that massively high income, I want that taken into account in my model. So what can I do? Well, I can apply a log function. And this little checkbox there shows me what that log function looks like. And you can see now, I've lost my outliers, and if I go back to my histogram, I now have a more normal distribution. And so by analyzing this data, I could see that, yes, I have a need to run a log function over my yearly income. Now, I could also look at things like missing data, etc. I would also probably evaluate that the ID field is meaningless to me. Now, there's additional ways for me to analyze my data. I can also look at things like, I can also go down and look at descriptive statistics and grab this guy and drag him down here and then run the model. And then I can take a look at some higher level statistics. I can see I'll get a higher degree of statistics. I'll get things like, well, let's just take a look. If we visualize, you can see I get counts, min maxes, I get ranges, I get quartiles. Down here you can see I get higher level statistics here. So this is going to give me additional information that's going to allow me to understand my data. There are other tools out there as well. We've got elementary statistics that you can choose, where you can look at one stat at a time, as well as you can look at things like the linear correlation, and I can choose to take a look at how varying fields are correlated with one another. But let's assume, because we don't have much time, let's assume that I understand my data now. I've walked through and used all of those modules to understand my data. The next thing I need to do is start doing some feature selection. Well, before I do my feature selection, let's say I learned a couple things about my data, and I said, all right, I need to eliminate the ID field. The ID field is not predictive, as you can imagine. So I'm going to use a project columns module to eliminate the ID field. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to launch this column selector, and I'm going to tell it, hey, begin with all columns and exclude column names of ID. So now I've done that. I've cleaned that out. Now what if I had some missing values? Let's clean out the missing values. So I'm going to use clean missing data module. I'm going to drag this down here. And down in here, I have a bunch of choices. I can choose, what do I want to do? Do I want to remove the entire row? Do I want to replace it with the mean or the median? I've got a bunch of choices depending upon the nature of my data. I'm just going to go ahead and, for the sake of time, remove the rows for any missing data, and I'm going to choose all columns. Okay? So now let's assume that I understand my data, I've cleaned my data, now I want to go ahead and figure out which features are most important. Well, I only have 10 features here, so it's not going to hurt me to just include them all, but let's assume I had thousands and I wanted to figure out which features were most important. Well, we can do that. I can go ahead and take a look at filter-based feature selection. I'm just going to drag this in here, and all I need to tell this module is, what is my label? So I'm going to tell it the label is the bike buyer. That's the Boolean, the bit that tells me, did you buy or did you not buy? The interesting thing here is the filter-based feature selection allows me to choose, or allows me to analyze, given differing algorithms, the relative importance of each of the features. And so depending upon the nature of your data, you can choose different scoring methods. So I'm going to go ahead and choose chi-squared here. I didn't do that up front, so I'm going to do that. I'm going to choose bike buyer again. And I'll run this one last time. So as I mentioned, depending upon the nature of your data, you can choose varying scoring models, and you can compare those scoring models. And what you're going to get is a rank order of the importance of each of those features. And so if you had thousands of these features, you could use this to define these features are the most important and they're not correlated to others. Okay? So now let's assume I've chosen my features. I've said, all right, I've got all the features I want. Now what I want to do is train a model. So let's do that. Let's build a model and let's train it and let's score it and let's evaluate it. So as I mentioned, the first thing I want to do is split my data. You split your data, the reason why you split it is because when you train a model, if you trained a model with all your data, you run the risk of what's called overfitting the model. And that means that you've built a model that's only good on that data, but it's not really predictive in the real world. So what you want to do is train your model with some of the data, and then you want to evaluate it with the rest of the data to make sure you didn't overfit it. And so I'm going to split my data 80% for training and 20% to score my model. Next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to bring in a train model, and this is a module that allows me to train any algorithm. Okay, and now I'm going to grab an algorithm. So remember, we had a binary classification problem. So I can go down here to machine learning. Under the machine learning, you can see I've got classifications. So I've got a bunch of two-class classification algorithms. And that diagram I showed you will help you define which ones to grab, but I would suggest you grab multiple. So I'm going to start with the two-class logistic regression, easy for me to say. And I'm just going to drag that into my train model. Now, my train model needs to know what is my label. So I'm going to choose bike buyer again. Good. Now I'm going to score my model. So I'm just going to drag my train into my score, and I'm going to take the second set of my split data, and I'm going to use that second set, the 20% I held back, to score it. And now I'm going to evaluate my model. Now I'm going to run this thing. Now you can see, oh, it just ran it, and everything is run. And now we can take a look at the results of this model. So I'm going to right-click on Evaluate and choose Visualize. You can see that I've got my results here. This is called a rock curve. See this diagonal line? That diagonal line represents a guess. It's a 50-50. So if my curve, the further it is towards the top left, the better my model is, okay? So right now, my model's better than 50-50. Incidentally, I don't have much time to walk through a bunch of the ifs, ands, or whys, but you typically use the awk. When you're comparing two models, you'll compare them by the awk. So let me quickly grab another model. Let's grab another algorithm, and let's train that. So I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna use a different way. Instead of splitting my data, I'm gonna use something called cross-validate. Cross-validate is another way of, it's kind of like an automated splitting, but it does a bunch of splits for you. And it's actually more efficient. It takes longer, but it's actually better in the long run than using split. It's more accurate anyways. So let's go ahead and grab a different model. I'm going to grab something called I'm going to use a two-class boosted decision tree. And I think this is going to give me much better results. So let's run this thing. I need to tell it what my label is again. We might be losing a little internet connectivity here. Nope. All right, we're going to let this thing go for a second. Let's see if I can try that again. Okay, so I'm going to choose bike buyer again. And then I'm going to run this thing, and then we're just going to quickly see the two models evaluated against one another. Once we've got that, I could easily remove the model I didn't want. These guys run. Okay, they ran. Now I can go ahead and visualize both of these, and we'll see that the awk of my second model is much higher. Second algorithm did much better. So the first one was 655, and the second one is 831. And what awk stands for is area under the curve. So hopefully what you saw is that it's very easy to start building models with Azure ML Studio without having a high degree of knowledge about how those models work. Okay? I could have easily just chosen to expose that out as a web service as well. But for time constraints, we're just going to kind of keep moving on. Next thing I want to talk to you about is Project Oxford. Project Oxford are a bunch of APIs that if you've ever worked with Bing and Cortana, a lot of these will become very familiar to you. How many of you guys have seen howold.net, where you can enter in a picture of yourself and it tells you how old you are? Mine said I was 56. Really ticked me off. Anyways, that was built using these APIs. So the face APIs, speech APIs, computer, and then Lewis, which is really interesting. So the face APIs, you've got face detection, face verification. You can find similar faces. for speech APIs. You can do text to speech, speech to text. And you can integrate with something called Lewis, which allows you to figure out the intent of someone's speech. So if someone says, hey, I want to start a new run, or I want to start a new walk, or a new bike ride, we can understand the intent of what you were saying. And the model can be trained to further understand. So that if you said, I want to start a new checkers match, it would know the checkers match is an entity that you could start a new one of. Computer vision APIs. This allows you to do awesome OCR, as well as create thumbnails and moderate your content so people don't have some kind of fishy stuff, racy photos, if you will. And then Lewis, this is, as I mentioned, how you can gather intent of what someone's saying. You can build your own Lewis models, or you can use the pre-built ones that come from Bing and Cortana. The best way to understand Project Oxford is to see a demo. So let's do that. So these are all just demos that are available online. So if you go out to projectoxford.ai, you'll find all of the APIs out here. And all that information you just saw are available here. So I can click on the face APIs. And when I do, I can go into a live demo. Everyone see where I'm clicking here? The live demo. So I'm gonna click on this. And you can see, hopefully things will speed up here. You can see that this is illustrating off from this picture. It's detecting a bunch of varying features of that person, including estimating the age, et cetera. Now over here you can see we're doing detection, trying to see if these two people are the same. So this, we had a score of 637. These two guys look less alike, and so we now have a confidence of 25%. These two gals look nothing alike, and so the confidence level is zero. All of these are APIs, just web APIs that you can call into and take advantage of. You don't have to write any machine learning, but it has massive amounts of logic behind it. We can go into face verification. And I think we just did that one. Let's go into, speech to text and text to speech. And so we can simply, you can click on, I guess I didn't plug in my speaker. Let me do that real quick. Oh, I can't find the speaker. Here it is. Let me plug the speaker in. And if you wanted to do text-to-speech, are you guys lit up?
Enter or paste the text to be synthesized into speech.
Did everybody hear that?
This presentation is great.
See? Even Cortana knows. So you can take advantage of all of these APIs that allow you to interact with real objects. They make it so much easier for you to build things like interaction with the real world. You can use speech to text in your applications, building a mobile app so somebody talks into it. Not only can you gather what they're saying, but you can use Lewis to figure out the intent and map that into functions. I really highly suggest that you take a look at Lewis, L-U-I-S, which is the fourth of those pillars. The last thing I want to talk about is probably the what's going to be the most interesting over the long term, which is the machine learning marketplace. This is a marketplace where data scientists can basically build their models and they can push them out into the marketplace for a cost or for no cost, depending upon what they do. And then you can take advantage of those APIs. Now, in order to seed this marketplace, the Microsoft data scientists have already built a ton of these APIs and have put them out there. So let's take a look at the machine learning marketplace. So you can see out here, here's the URI, datamarket.azure.com. Okay, WAC browse query machine learning. And you can see I've got a ton of APIs out here. Right now there are 41. So I've got health methods, I've got Bing Voice, Bing voice recognition, so I can integrate voice into my apps. Customer churn, can figure out if a customer is likely to go to the competition. I've got text analytics. This is what I'm gonna do a demo for you. Let's take a look at this text analytics. How many of you wanna do sentiment analysis for your customers? You wanna figure out if your customers are happy. You can take their comments, run them through the sentiment. You can say, this restaurant was great. Let's analyze it. This is just making a web service call into this. It's giving me back two results here. One is the sentiment, 87%, and then it's gonna give me back a bunch of keywords. It pulls out what it thinks were the most relevant pieces of text within there. What if I went from great to awesome? Given the training on this algorithm, it's going to, drum roll please, move up from 87 to 90%. Awesome is better than great, apparently. If I put in bad, it would tank back down. Now I want to show you an app I wrote. Sorry, we had this queued up, but I had to reboot in order to get internet connectivity, so you're gonna have to bear with me while I open this up. But I use this API to build an app, a sample application, that I think really strongly brings home the power of taking advantage of these APIs. What I wanted to build was a tag cloud. So if you go out maybe to a site where you have a bunch of comments about somebody's service, and then you pull back all those comments and you run a sentiment analysis against them all and you pull out the keywords, I want to build a tag cloud, and I want to, what keywords, the ones that are more often used are going to be bigger, and if they're positive, they're going to be green, and if they're negative, they're going to be red. And I want to give you a visualization of the sentiment of the comments. So I'm going to do one for a restaurant I go to, and everybody loves this restaurant. It's right near my house. It's lovely. And so I'm pulling back all of this data, and I'm running it through those APIs, through the sentiment APIs, and I'm building out this tag cloud. And you can see I have this brilliant tag cloud. It's okay to clap. No? All right. So I've got this tag cloud that shows me, now everybody who really likes my restaurant, they love the food, but they don't like the servers. There are a couple people that don't like the food, and some people are kind of okay about the bacon. Now, if I were to click on these and say, all right, I want to understand what people like or don't like about bacon, I can go grab that text again that had those keywords in it, and eventually it'll show up, and I can highlight the reason why people didn't. They liked the bacon was thick, the bacon recently added something spectacular, my son had eggs and bacon, blah, blah, blah. You can tell just from the sentiment, I'm able to give you a visualization of what people think given all of the comments. And that's just using the APIs that are available to you within the marketplace. So hopefully you can see that you've got a bunch of APIs that are available via Oxford and via the marketplace. Take a look, see what's there, see what you can use, see what you can exploit in your applications. Do you have data, do you have problems that require an algorithm? Look to see if there's an API out there that fulfills what you need, and then you can take advantage of it. If not, you can build your own models using ML Studio. With that, I think that's all the time I have. Do I have time for questions or no? I have time for a few questions if anybody has any. We're getting the microphone. No questions.
哪一位嘉宾有提问吗？
Hello, may I know how to use the machine learning in the Project Oxford in the face recognition? Using the machine learning in the face detect in the Project Oxford using the API, if I detect the face every time, does the machine will learning it every time and the recognition will
be better. Can we take this offline? I can't quite understand the question,
okay.
But
maybe come
up to me afterwards and we'll talk about it. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Oh. I guess we have one more. Sorry.
I just, hello, thanks for presenting, it's very awesome. And I just want to know, is there any rate limit for the API, or are you going to charge for the API cost in future?
Differing APIs have a cost, some have a cost, some don't. But it's clear, if you go take a look out on the marketplace, they will, as you click on these guys, hang on a sec. If you click on this, you'll see there's a cost. Normally, yep, so here's the, so it's normally fairly clear what the costs are. And so you can take a look. For that particular one, those are the costs that they have.
Thank
so you. You have to look on a case-by-case basis. One last question.
Suppose my data set is very big. How to load them to the Azure?
I'm sorry?
My data set is very big.
Oh, if you have a very big data set.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are limitations on the size of the data set. When you have larger data sets, you typically upload them into Blob storage and then use a reader to read through them.
I think the
limit is 10 gigabytes.
Oh, okay,
you have to validate that.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.